We are going to jump right in. The subject of today's shiur is, where was God in the Exodus? Obviously, the phrase, of course, and the question is somewhat facetious, but you'll understand the question momentarily. So I'm just going to jump into sharing my sources, and that should be the source page that you all have now on your screen. Can you all see my screen? And can all see me? We're good? All right. So when I originally planned for this topic, it was before the events of Motzei Shabbos, which just kind of reiterates and strengthens much of what we're going to talk about. And my intent in this discussion was really to understand the extraordinary significance of Pesach, so much so that the Nevi'im talk about that Yitzhak Mitzrayim becomes the paradigm for all future redemptions and all future moments of great salvation that God saves the Jewish people. And I will, like you left Egypt, I will show you marvelous things in the future. And we talk about Pesach being a Lel Shimurim, a night of watchfulness. God watches and protects us. And certainly we all felt Motzei Shabbos, Yishan Shomei Yisrael, that the guardian of Israel neither sleeps nor slumbers, and that in truth, God was truly watching over his people, together with an extraordinary coalition of Malachim who helped in that effort. I want to focus specifically on the meaning of Pesach. And what I mean by the meaning of Pesach is not just a holiday. The holiday, we all know what it means. But I really want to zero in on the name of the holiday, because the name of the holiday has always struck me as kind of odd. If we look at the sequence of holidays, first of all, we say in the Haggadah, Rabbi Gamliel, one of the three statements that we have to say and we have to understand. Rabbi Gamliel said, if you don't say one of these three, each of these three things and explain them, matzah, maror, and Pesach, then you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah. So Pesach, what is Pesach? Sheyu avotenu ochlim bizman shebet hamikdash haya kayam. What is this Korban Pesach? Al shum shepesach HaKadosh Baruch Hu batei avotenu b'mitzrayim. God passed over the houses of Israel in Egypt. As it says, v'amartem zevach Pesach u'lehashem. This is an offering of passing over. Asher pesach al batei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, because God passed over the houses of Israel as he smote Egypt and saved us, with Batenu Hitzil, and the people responded. And so we really define the holiday by the korban that bears its name, the korban Pesach and the holiday of Pesach. And the definition of the word Pesach is really what I want to focus on. It's hard to imagine a shiur of interest that that's focused on the definition of one word, but nonetheless, that's really what we're dealing with. Because every holiday, the name of the holiday tells us much about the nature of the holiday. Shavuot is all about the counting of the weeks to the Omer, and the counting of the weeks to Matan Torah. That's what the holiday is defined as. Sukkot are the booths and the clouds and the protection of the Jewish people in the desert. That's what defines the holiday. Defining a holiday by God passing over our homes as he smote Egypt, it's an odd definition of the holiday. And yes, this is holy of Chag HaMatzot, and I'm not going to address the question of the dual name of the holiday today. That's not today's shiur. That's a different shiur. But in terms of Chag HaPesach, in terms of Zevach Korban Pesach, the holiday is defined by this act of God passing over, or as Rashi describes it, HaKorban Kavoy Pesach Hashem HaDilug V'HaPsicha, because God sprang over, passed over, jumped over, middaleg al batei b'nei Yisrael, he would pass over, jump over the houses of Israel, as you would go from house of Egyptian to house of Egyptian, the kofetz mi mitzri le mitzri, so that the Israelite in the middle would be spared, v'Yisrael emtza'i nimlat. It's really quite an extraordinary picture, that that's our image of this holiday. God jumping over houses. It's like, I'm not sure what to do with that. What's the significance of that? Why is that so meaningful? Why is that the name of the holiday? And that's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that the definition of the word Pesach or Poseach as jumping over we're passing over, hence the name Passover, is somewhat questionable because we have verses, for example, like Pasuk in Vayikra, that describes a certain kind of physical limitations. Ish iver o piseach o charum asavua. If a person was blind or lame, what is a person who is lame called? It's called a piseach. Why is he lame? Why is he called piseach? Because he jumps from one to the other? It's an odd name, right? Iver v'piseach. Why is, and Rashi will quote those psukim and say that you see that a person who is lame kind of jumps from one side to the other. Similarly, with Eliyahu and Har HaKamel, we find the phrase used in the verb, ad matay atem poschim al shnei hasi'ipim. Why do you hop between the two sides, between the two boughs? Why do you kind of equivocate, right? But you hop from one side to the other. So what is this passing over, jumping over, and why does that define the nature of the holiday? That's one question. I would call that the textual question. Okay, textual questions are important. But this textual question is really the flip side of a much more dramatic philosophical question. And it's the philosophical question that we need to really struggle with, because I can live with a textual question like, okay, well, it's why is the jumping so important? But the philosophical question is much deeper, much more troubling. And for that, I want to jump in the source pages. It's the last page, but I pulled it up here twice so I can reach it quickly. I want to jump to Shmot Perek Yud Bet, which is the chapter that describes Makat Bechorot, the plague of the firstborn, as well as the entire story of the Korban Pesach, both Korban Pesach in Egypt as well as Korban Pesach for generations to come. All the laws of Pesach essentially are defined in this chapter. And I just want to check one thing. Okay. And as we go through this and we zero in on the role of the word Pesach, okay, so we're eating, here's they take the blood and they sprinkle it on the doorposts. We'll come back to that. Let's start from there. Take this animal and take the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel, al shtem, zot, al mashkov. And why do we put the blood on the doorpost? We'll see in a moment. And then we eat the korban in various fashions. We'll talk about how we eat it. Starting with Pasuk Yibet. V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh. I will pass through the land of Egypt on this night. V'keti kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim mi'adam ve'ad behema. Can everybody see the sources? We're good? I will smite every firstborn of the Egyptians. And I will deal with the deities of Egypt as well. This blood that you put on the doorposts, look at Rashi and Rashbam, whether it's inside, outside, not our issue for today. This blood that you put on the doorposts will be as a sign. I will see the blood, ufasachti alechem, and therefore I will pass over you. V'lo yeh bachem negef lamashchit, and the plague or the destroyer shall not come in to destroy as I smite Egypt. Go down a little bit further, pasuk chaf aleph. Vayikra Moshe lizikne Yisrael. Moshe gathers the elders of Israel and he says to them, go and prepare for yourselves this korban, this Pesach, shachatu Pesach, and take the blood, utvaltem badama shebasav, vigatem ala mashkof, yoshtem uzuzot min adama shebasav, and you will take this hyssop bundle and you will use it to dip in the blood, and then you will dip the blood on the doorposts and on the lintel. And you can't go outside from the house. You are literally inside the house. Why are you inside the house? Because outside is death and destruction. We don't want you to engage there. You are protected because you're inside the house where this blood is on the doorposts. God will pass through Egypt to smite Egypt. He will see the blood on the doors. Ufasach Hashem al petach. God will pass over that door. V'lo yiten hamashchit lavoel batechem lingof. And not let the destroyer come into your houses to destroy. Who? What is this mashchit, this destroyer? And the odd thing about this destroyer is it's presented almost as a kind of a contrast to God. God will pass over your houses and not let the destroyer enter your homes. What is that? And if you go back to the Haggadah, and here I'm going back to the second page of the sources, we say in the Haggadah, we emphasize that there was no mashchit, there was no external destroyer, there was no nobody else or no other thing involved in Makat B'chorot. V'yatzienu Hashem Mitzrayim. God took us out of Egypt, not through a malach, not through an angel, and not through a seraph, and not through an agency, or shaliach HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvado b'atzmo. How do I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself? Because it says, V'avarti b'eretz Mitzrayim, I will pass through the land of Egypt on this day, v'keiti go b'chor, I will smite the firstborns of Egypt, v'esesh v'chol Elohim Mitzrayim, v'esesh Shvatim, says the Haggadah, Avarti, I will pass into Egypt, v'lo yedei malach, v'keiti, not through an angel and not through a seraph, and I will exact judgment against the deities, v'lo yedei shaliach, not through an agent, ani Hashem, v'lo acher, I, me, God says, myself. So who's the mashchit? So what is this? I will not let the destroyer enter and destroy. As if you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu and you have a mashchit. What is that? That question, I didn't invent that question. That question we all ask, right? Every time we get to this passage in the Haggadah, the Beis HaLevi asks this question most dramatically, and he says, he asks it point blank. He says, on the one hand, we say that the Pasuk says, God will pass over our houses and not let the Mashchit enter. The Pasuk says it twice. And on the other hand, Yadud Rashat Chazal, that the Pasuk says, Chazal said that Bavarti below Malach, and Bahacha Mar Mashchit, says the Beis HaLevi. And here it says there's a Mashchit. So what this Mashchit is, he's a destroyer, comes in to destroy, and God will say, okay, not this house, because this house is marked with blood. We've all seen the movie, right? We've all seen Cecil B. DeMille's movie, right? Technicolor. It comes out and creates Malach HaMavis is green. He has this vision of this Malach HaMavis house. Sees the blood on the door, person passes by. What is this? And Rashi, in an attempt to help us understand the role of this Mashchit, Rashi says something which makes it only even more difficult. Philosophically, he says, "Shemeachar shenitna reshut lamashchit lechabel eino mavchin ben tzaddik l'rasha." Once the mashchit, the destroyer, is given permission to destroy, the destroyer doesn't discriminate between righteous and wicked. So says the Mechilta. And therefore, when calamity hits, the calamity doesn't address just this righteous person or just this wicked person. Calamity hits broadly. And the righteous and the wicked suffer together. And therefore, at that night, when the mashchit was given, quote-unquote, free reign, God had to mark the Jewish homes with something external for what? So that the mashchit could see which were the Jewish homes and which was not the Jewish homes? If you'll pardon me, but it sounds a little too anthropomorphic for my comfort level. And yet we say God came into Egypt and no other, no malach, no angel of death, just God. So what's the mashchit? That's really the most difficult, the philosophical questions in this discussion. Okay, so I've asked a textual question on the meaning of the word Pesach and a philosophical question, the role of God and the role of the Mashchit. Now, this whole presentation once was originally put together as a Shabbos HaGadol context, so for those of you who want to use it for Shabbos HaGadol, by all means. But to do so, I want to take us a little bit into a kind of a halachic discussion for a few moments. So you'll forgive me if that's not your thing, but we're kind of going to digress into a little bit of a halachic conversation. And that is to understand the nature of the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is unique. Not I'm not talking about Korban Pesach for generations to come. I'm talking about the Korban Pesach in Egypt. When they were sitting there, night of Seder night, and they were eating of the Pesach, and the Pasuk and the Korban Pesach, Zevach Pesach Ulasha, this offering, there's some oddities about this that make it very difficult to understand. There are certain fundamentals that every Korban requires, and for which there is no exception. For example, every Korban requires not just that it be slaughtered and put on the altar, but there's an entire ceremony related to the collection of the blood and the sprinkling of the blood of a Korban on the Mizbeach. That requirement of sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach is a prerequisite for every Korban. There are no exceptions, unless it's a meal offering, in which case there's no blood, but a Korban of any kind requires Zrika on the Mizbeach. So I'll ask the simple question, right? Where is the sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach? There is no Mizbeach in Egypt. There's no altar, and there's no temple. So what is it that was required? Second halacha, there's a requirement in every context of every Korban that certain portions of the animal, the emurim as they refer to, they are burnt on the altar. Well, there's no altar in Mitzrayim. So if there's no altar, where were these portions burnt? So there's no blood. There's no Mizbeach. There's no altar to sprinkle the blood on. There's no altar to burn the Emurim on. What kind of a Korban is missing profound pieces of the Korban experience? This question is so dramatic and so profound that it led the Chasam Sofer to write in a tshuva that, based on Gemara Menachos, the Gemara Menachos says, "Mal Pesach Mitzrayim shechen ein ton matan damim ve'emurim l'gabei mizbeach." Pesach Mitzrayim was an exception; it did not require blood on the altar and on the sprinkling of the blood on the altar, and it did not require the sacrificial portions upon the altar because there was no altar. So, based on that, Chasam Sofer says it wasn't a korban at all. Pesach Mitzrayim, shelo haya mizbeach. It didn't have an altar to sprinkle the blood, and it didn't have a mizbeach to sacrifice the internal portions, therefore. Kumidumali, it would seem to me, says the Chasam Sofer, I don't have a translation of this, so I'm translating as we go, that achlu et achalavim ve'ha'emurim b'chlal v'achlu et abasam, alay lazeh. They must have eaten those portions of the animal that are normally brought on the mizbeach. Because what else would they do with them? They had to finish it all. They couldn't leave any for the morning. There was no altar to burn it on. So it must be that they consumed them. If they consumed the portions of the animal that are normally brought on the altar, then for all intents and purposes, there's no korban here. There's no korban. How do we call it a korban pesach, a zevach pesach? There's no altar, there's no mizbeach, there's no sacrificial parts on the mizbeach, and there's no sprinkling of the blood. So what makes the Korban Pesach a Korban? Now, there are components of this particular Korban that were important, right? Matzah and the Maror that we ate with it, and the Pesach, as we say in Rambam Gamliel says in the Haggadah, each one of these had to do with a component of or a part of the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. They're not Korban related. So there's no laws in this Korban Pesach that would make any sense in terms of the laws of Korbanot. And yet, the Torah describes this in such precise legal language of a Korban. They would take the animal, sell a bet avot, sell a bite, one animal for every household. L'lakchu min adam, they would take the blood. Okay, there's no mizbeach. They would put it on the doorposts. They would eat the meat. Tzliyesh, you had to have it roasted, right? That sounds like roasting on the altar. Umatzot amronim yochlu, we'll come back to that. They couldn't eat it raw. They couldn't eat it cooked. They couldn't eat it cooked in water. It had to be only roasted because it looked like a korban. Rosho al kra'av al kirbo, together with its legs and its innards, meaning whole, had to be roasted. which is also a phrase that we'll see in the context of korbanot. Ulot atir mimenu ad boker, you couldn't leave any over for the morning. Ve'anotar mimenu ad boker be'esh tisrofu, if you left any in the morning, it had to be burnt. And that's how you would eat this. And says the Torah, this was considered a zevach. If your child asks next year, what is this avodah that you're doing? You will say, zevach Pesach ul Hashem. You will say it's an offering of Pesach. Because God passed over the houses of Egypt, of Israel, as he smote the Egyptians, as we said. So what is all of these laws if this is not a korban, if this is just a family gathering and a family meal? Right? The truth is that when you start to take down these laws one by one, suddenly you realize there's a lot of korban, there's a lot of sacrifice in this particular korban, which is really fascinating. So I charted it out, as this is just a small subset of the chart. But I charted it out just to kind of give us a sense. And I apologize, this part doesn't have translations. I'm going to translate it. But I just wanted you to see the context. The blood. Okay, let's start with the basic issue. They place the blood on the doorpost and on the lintel. So we didn't have a mizbeach, that's true. But we did have the sprinkling of the blood on something. As it says by every korban that they had to have the sprinkling of the blood on Kanot HaMizbeach. So I don't know if there's a connection between these two or not. We'll see. We have to explore that. But let's look at some of the other issues. Let's look at the requirement to eat matzah. Well, tzliesh we already established, right? Every korban is tzliesh. Every korban is roasted on the altar. But let's talk about matzot. Why do we eat matzah on Pesach? That's an easy one, right? Why do we eat matzah on Pesach? Matzah zu shanu achlim hashuma. Because?
Because they didn't have time to bake bread.
They didn't have time to bake bread. We were running out of Egypt. Excuse me, I'm missing something. They're still in Egypt. They're still in Egypt that night. And they're told that they're eating this offering, this korban, al matzot umirorim, with matzah and maror. We'll still get to the maror in a moment. But they had to eat this offering with tzli'esh umatzot, roasted with matzah. Well, I'm missing something. If they haven't been expelled yet, they could easily sit down and drink any bread. No problem. Why do they have to have matzah? Interesting. Now, what if I told you that is there any other context outside of Korban, outside of Pesach, outside of the holiday of Pesach, where you have to have matzah and chametz is prohibited? Outside of Pesach, is there any other context in which you have to have matzah and chametz is prohibited? Lo and behold, the answer is yes. The mizbeach. You could never, with very few exceptions, you were never allowed to bring chametz on the altar. Nothing to do with Pesach. This is in Vayikra Perek Bet. Kol mincha, any meal offering, any offering that had flour in it, which you brought as an offering to God, lo te'aseh chametz. You were never allowed to bring an offering that had chametz in it, ever. So, wait a second. You're telling me that, and all meal offerings, therefore, are described as matzot, chalot matzot, korban toda, chalot matzot, kike matzot, right? Because there was never any meal, never any chametz allowed on the mizbeach. So are you telling me that every time you had a korban, you had to eat it with matzah and no chametz? The answer is, well, the altar had to consume with matzah and no chametz. So I maybe that's why we ate matzah in Mitzrayim, because it was an offering. It was a korban. I haven't resolved the question of where the mizbeach is, but if it's a korban, every korban requires matzah and prohibition of chametz. So now suddenly my whole matzah takes on a new meaning. I'm not so sure that I'm eating matzah because we left Egypt. I'm eating matzah the next 7 days because we left Egypt in a hurry. I'm eating matzah Leil HaSeder because they ate matzah with the Korban Pesach Seder night. That had nothing to do with leaving Egypt. Even the phrase Rosha al Kra'avi al Kirbo is a phrase that comes from the laws of Korbanot. We find it in the laws of Chatat, al Rosha al Kra'avi Kirbo Firsho. The requirement not to leave any till the morning, any part of it that was left till the morning had to be burnt. The concept of nota, any portion, every korban has a limited amount of time by which it can be consumed. And if you, whatever that time is, it's different for every korban. If you pass that time, the rest of it has to be burnt. There is a law about korbanot that says that you can't shecht it, or you can't have in mind to eat it outside of the domain of the mikdash. Well, do we know of a halacha about the Korban Pesach that was similarly structured so that you couldn't eat it outside of the domain of the Korban? Yeah. They weren't allowed to leave the house. So where is the Mizbeach? I have all of these related laws pertaining to a Korban. I don't have a Mizbeach. Leading the Chassam Sofer to say, oh, no, it must not be a korban. They must have eaten the chalavim and the emurim, and we're not dealing with the korban, we're dealing with the family meal. I'm not so sure. All of these laws are korban-related laws, and they were relevant in Egypt. So what is going on? The truth is, what is a mizbeach? Mizbeach isn't some box with some glorified magical corners and horns of the mizbeach. Mizbeach was a concept. Mizbeach Adamat Taseli. After Matan Torah, from Shmot Perek Chaf, it says that they can make an altar. Before they built the Mikdash, they can make an altar out of lots of things. They can make an altar out of anywhere before they built the Mikdash itself. And if they made a Mizbeach, says the Torah, Mizbeach Adamat Taseli, they had to make it out, they could make it out of earth. And on that earth, you would bring all kinds of sacrifices and offerings. You could make it, you could put it anywhere theoretically until you built a mikdash. Listen to this pasuk. V'chol makom asher ezkir et shmi avo elecha uverechticha. Every place where I enable my name to be expressed, I will come and bless you. So of course, you have Birkat Kohanim, right? V'samut shmi av bnei Yisrael. But the reference here to Mizbeach is that the Mizbeach is what? It's a place where you bring offerings to call out in the name of God and therefore invite the divine presence and the divine blessing to be there. The Mizbeach was a place for the Shekhinah to rest. Based on that, I want to go back to the Gemara in Pesachim. Gemara in Pesachim says, and this is, the Chassam Sofer quotes this Gemara, but he rejects it more as a garata. I'm not so sure. Gemara says, Tanar of Yosef, Shlosha Mizbechot Tayusham. In Egypt, we had three altars. What were they? Mashkof, Ve'ashtei Mezuzot. The doorposts and the lintel of the home were the altars in Mitzrayim. That's really extraordinary. What is Yosef saying? Yosef is saying is that we had a Mizbeach in Egypt. It wasn't a physical, didn't look like a Mizbeach. It didn't look like an altar. It didn't have the corners of the altar to sprinkle the blood on, but we had a Mizbeach. What was the Mizbeach? I had three Mizbeachot, right? The Mashkof and the Shtei Mezuzot. Every home in which every table upon which the korban Pesach was being consumed was a mizbeach. The blood was on the doorposts. The limitation in terms of where they could go, they had to be inside the home. They couldn't leave that home. All the laws of Pesach, of korban, applied to that korban Pesach, including the prohibition of the prohibition of chametz and the requirement to eat matzah, because that was relevant to every korban on the mizbeach. Every offering on the mizbeach had to be, if you had meal, it had to be flour, it had to be matzah and could not be chametz, because that was a law in the korban in the mizbeach. And so the home becomes the mizbeach. That's the extraordinary chiddush of Rav Yosef. If I go back to the text, I'll show you something very interesting. I go back to the text of Shmot Perek Yudbet. You know how many times the Torah emphasizes that this korban had to be in the bayit? Sell a bet avot, sell a bayit, in the house, in the home. And if there wasn't enough people in the house, you had to have, bring neighbors into the home in advance of the night. El beto. I started to ask myself, how many times does this phrase bayit appear in this passage? Well, I've shown you this little trick before. This is a Tanakh lab on this website that I like to use. And so this is the entire chapter, right? All the laws of the Korban Pesach. Click here in the reference here. Okay, let's turn this all off and do it again. Okay. Oops. Okay. Click on the word bayit, and you'll see all the highlights, all the times that the word bayit appears in this passage. 16 times. Celebrate avot, a lamb for the house, a lamb for the household. If there's not enough people there, you take more people into the bayit. And you place the door on the doorpost and on the lintel of the bayit. And the blood on the bayit will be there when the mashkit comes, when God comes. Pasachti alechem. And you have to remove all chametz from the bayit. You have to eat matzah and you have to remove all chametz for 7 days from the bayit. Shivat yamim solo imatzei bevatechem. You couldn't leave the house till the morning. So that the mashkit doesn't come into the bayit. It's Pesach because God passed over the houses of Israel. On and on. No, the central motif of this korban was that it was in the bayit. Says Rav Yosef, that's because the bayit became the mizbeach. And the lintel became the mizbeach, and the bayit became a place in which the Shekhinah rested, in which the Shekhinah dwelt. Or is at least mentioned, that Mokom Mokom Hashem is Kirat Shmi. I talked about matzah, and the Isser matzah, chametz, that applied to every korban. What about Moroh? Mar is interesting. Right? Mar doesn't have anything to do with Korbanot, right? Mar has to do with the bitterness of Egypt. So how does Mar fit into this theme that the Korban, the Pesach and the Matzah was all Korban related, not necessarily the experience of Egypt related? Well, take a look at this Or HaChaim. This Or HaChaim has always fascinated me. Says the Or HaChaim, Lefi Pshat HaKatuv, why is it on Mar? Why do we have to eat Mar? So Pshat HaKatuv, he says, right, why do we eat Mara? You tell me, right? Why do we eat Mara? Because the Egyptians embittered our lives, right? Says the Or HaChaim, Lefi ma she'inu she'mar she'Hashem hitzrich tzli esh. Based on this idea that the korban had to be roasted, meaning the Pesach had to be roasted, and that it had to be v'shiel shalem, it had to be whole, it had to look like a korban, it had to be sound, right? If it walks, looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, right? A duck is not a kosher korban. But right, you understand the imagery. Ze yagid shedat elyon laharot b'china ha'gdola v'charut v'ein m'shut achayim aleim. The verse demonstrates that we were free. V'lefi ze gam hamirorim sheyitzav Hashem. This is the nature of people who eat roast. What do they do with roasted meat? You have to do it in a barbecue. You take a hamburger, you take a hot, whatever you're barbecuing, you put on your bun. What else do you put on the bun with a hamburger? Anybody here put relish? Right? When you're hot dog and hamburger, when you're eating in a barbecue, relish is sharp, is tangy, right? Is mara-ish, because it enhances the flavor, it enhances the taste. Or I once went to a very fancy dinner. They served steak, and with the steak, they served a little bowl of white horseradish, because that's what you do in very fancy places. And I understood this Or HaChaim. Mara was white horseradish served with the steak. That's exactly what the Mara was. You ate the korban al matzot mirorim with the matzah and the isur chametz because it's a korban, together with the Mara because it enhances the flavor of the meat. And we have to recognize that that's a korban. A fascinating observation. The house is a mizbeach. The Pesach is the korban. The blood on the doorpost is the sprinkling of the blood. The prohibition. Whoops. Sorry about that. What just happened? What just happened?
Fine here.
You're fine over there? My whole screen just it just blocked out because of this. Okay. I don't know what just happened. Oh my goodness. Can't stop. I can't get rid of this. What did the computer just do? Ugh, I had this once before start on me level class. Okay, I'm back. All good? Nobody's frozen? No, you're all frozen. Oh my goodness. Okay, are we good? Are we back? We're
We
all
can hear
good.
you and we can see the screen.
Okay, great. All right. So all of these issues all relate to the transformation of the home into the kind of mini mikdash and mizbeach that would enable the carbon to be a the carbon the home to be the mizbeach for the carbon of Pesach. If
Your
that's true,
translation is not accurate. The
oh,
Or
translation of
HaChaim
what?
doesn't me mention Egyptians. The Egyptians did not eat meat. The
I'm not getting into
translation has
anything.
Egyptian. The
That's
Or
not my
HaChaim
issue.
doesn't say that. And the Egyptians didn't eat meat.
I'm not suggesting the Egyptians ate meat, and I didn't say anything about that. All I said is
No,
that he
the
says,
translation says it.
I'm not interested in that. Translation is pulled off the website. What I
Okay.
said was that is that he's defining the role of the maror in a carbon. And a role of the maror in a carbon is to enhance the flavor of the meat. That's how we eat meat. It's a sign of freedom. That's all he says. Okay? So now moving forward, for some reason my computer has gone into one of these modes where everything's frozen. I apologize. It rarely happens, but it always happens. But when it happens, it's always in the middle of a shiur. Okay. We're just going to move forward. Here's another interesting aspect of the Mizbeach. I can't do this without my mouse. My mouse has gone frozen. Okay. Let's see if this will work. Here's another issue about the Mizbeach. Mizbeach had another characteristic altogether that had nothing to do with Korbanot. If you know the laws of Ritzeach B'Shogeg, of a person who kills somebody accidentally, there is a halacha that says that the Mizbeach served as one of the Arei Miklat. The Mizbeach served as a kind of haven or asylum or sanctuary from somebody who committed a kind of murder that would have to run to an Ir Miklat. HaMizbeach Kolet. As it says in the case of somebody who kills accidentally, that the me'im mizbechit, if he kills intentionally, you have to take him off the altar. If he kills accidentally, he can run to the altar. There's a very famous story in Malachim Aleph in which the Adoniyahu challenges Shlomo for the throne, runs to the Mizbeach, and he grabs hold of the Mizbeach as a way of saying, I'm in an extraterritorial space. You, the king, have no jurisdiction over me. So it's fascinating, the notion of the Mizbeach, and this is international, we see it in the news all the time, right? These notions that holy places are extraterritorial, we have no jurisdiction there, right? It's become very somewhat of a complicated piece in today's world, but nonetheless, in the context of the messaging of the Korban Pesach, the Jewish people are sitting in Egypt, they're sitting in their homes. And they're sitting in their homes eating a korban on the makeshift mizbeach, which is the home itself. And in that makeshift mizbeach, they're protected by the blood on the doorposts, by the mashkit, but they're also protected from Egypt. Egypt can't get to them. Egypt is stuck in their own homes, dealing with their own stuff. And they are in a kind of an asylum and a protected sanctuary from, in this case, not the king of Israel, but the king of Egypt. So it's a fascinating role for the Mizbeach in terms of, or in terms of the house. So where are we at? Where we're at, essentially, we've established that we have two questions we haven't answered yet. The meaning of the word Pesach and the meaning of the Mashchit, the destroyer in Egypt. I'm going to come back to those in a moment. What we have established is that the Korban Pesach that they were eating at that moment is a kind of Korban, unique Korban, because it's missing the Mizbeach. So where's the Mizbeach? The Mizbeach is the entire home. The blood on the doorposts is the sprinkling of the blood on the altar. Right? The altar itself is the home. It gets transformed, the Jewish home, at that moment into the Mizbeach for the Korban Pesach. As it says, Komakom she'ezkirat shmi, if you mention my name, I will come to you, I will bless you, I will place my divine presence. That's the concept of a Mizbeach. So let's come back to our first two questions. We started with the question of the Mashchit. I don't have a good answer for the Haggadah. I really don't. But I do have an answer for the source of the Haggadah. The source of the Haggadah is a Yerushalmi. And if we look at the source, the Yerushalmi doesn't say what the Haggadah says. The Yerushalmi says the following. I may have to reboot my computer. I apologize. This happened to me once before and during a Kohelet class, if you remember. But there's something wrong, and I can't get my computer to respond. Says the Yerushalmi, Kad atarachmana lifrok lemifrok yat Yisrael, when God came to redeem Israel, lo shalach, lo shaliach, v'lo malach, elohu be'atzmo. He didn't send an angel, and he didn't send a messenger, but he came himself. As it says, Vavarti b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, I will pass through the land of Egypt. Listen to the next four words. Hu v'chol hadargon didei. He and all of his entourage of angels. Wait a second. I'm confused. We just said no angels. Says the Medrash, when God came to redeem Israel, he came to redeem Israel himself. It doesn't say that when God came to smite the Egyptians, he came by himself. It says when God came to redeem Israel, lemifrokat Yisrael, he didn't send a messenger and he didn't send a malach, he came himself, avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim. But with him came an entourage of angels. What do you mean an entourage of angels? You know what it means? It means that the Ribbono Shel Olam came with this entire army of angels. Do you know that God is an army of angels that fight our battles for us, that protect us? I'll show you an interesting story, not related to Pesach, just fascinating story. Is everybody still seeing and hearing me? I'm not jumpy. I think
you're fine.
I'm fine. I don't know why I am having such computer problems today.
And we can still see the screen.
And you can still see the screen. Amazing. Okay. Well, source 22. So we're going to do this by numbers.
Does the word Dargon appear anywhere else? I'm not familiar.
I don't know. I'd have to look where it appears anywhere else. It's a fascinating word. It's an Aramaic word. It appears here in the context of this Yerushalmi. That's a separate issue, but I'm less bothered by it because whatever it means, the pasuk clearly talks about a mashrit. So I have to come back to the role of the Mashchit somewhere and understand it. So I think the Yerushalmi fits in the context of that Mashchit. What the word itself means is less of an issue. But here's an interesting story. Here, completely out of context. Story of Elisha and his lad, right? Gehazi. Meishlach, there's a king of Aram who is trying to destroy Elisha, who is trying to kill Elisha. And so he sends to Elisha, susim v'recha v'chayel kaved ma'od. He sends horses and chariots and a great army, and he throws everything he's got at Elisha. He's going to wipe out Elisha with this army of horses and chariots and a great number of soldiers. That night, v'yavo alayla v'yakifu et ta'ir, and he surrounded the city. The Misharet, in this case Gehazi, got up in the morning to go collect the morning paper. opens the front door. You all still there?
We're here.
Yeah, okay. My screen, everything's frozen, but okay. Don't know how to unfreeze this.
We hear and we see.
It's a miracle.
There you go. You know, it's certainly a miracle because it's not working at my end, but okay. Ve'ashkem mishavet ishel l'kim l'kum l'tzet ve'yitze v'inei chayel soveh b'te'ir. The entire city surrounded sus v'rechev, entire area. So v'yomen na'ro elav, the na'ar comes to Elisha and he says, Adonai, echad na'aseh, what are we going to do? It's you and me against horses and chariots and a great army. Elisha turns v'yomer, al tira, don't be afraid. Ki rabim asher itanu me'asher otam, because we outnumber them. And I can only imagine what Elisha is thinking, that what Gehazi is thinking. Elisha must have lost the plot. What do you mean we outnumber them? It's you and me against an army of horses and chariots. Let's do the numbers, do the math. So Elisha offers a small tefillah. Vayitpalel Elisha v'yomar. V'yomar Hashem, what's his tefillah? Fascinating. His tefillah is not save us, not save me, etc. His tefillah is p'kachna et einav v'yir'eh. God, open up his eyes so that he can see what I already see. V'yifkach Hashem et einav v'yir'eh v'yar v'hinei ha'har male susim. Behold, the mountain was filled with horses and chariots of fire. God has an army of malachim. He sent his army of malachim. Elisha could see them. Gehazi could not. So God helped him see at that moment what Elisha could already see. That's God's army, Tzva Hashem. We encountered it once when we learned Sefer Yehoshua. Yehoshua is standing outside Yericho and he sees a man standing there and he says to him, Alanu atay mutzareinu, are you friend or foe? And the man says to him, no, ani chsar tzva Hashem. I am the ministering angel of the army of God. We saw it, if you remember, in Daniel as well. God has an army of angels. When God came into Mitzrayim, he brought with him an army of angels. So that's the Mashrit. So where is God's role? I'm missing a piece of the story. So here is where I want to reframe our understanding of the word Pesach. And what's fascinating to me is that we typically, I'm assuming everybody's still with me, yes? Okay, my computer's still jumpy, so I got to do this carefully. If Rabbi Kelman, if you're still here, if I freeze, please call me, okay? That'll be the easiest way to do it.
We hear you and see you fine.
Great.
We'll let you know. Don't worry about any problem. You just go. We'll let you know if there's a problem.
Says Rashi, we are so used to listening, to hearing the second interpretation of Rashi on the meaning of the word Pesach. We don't even stop to realize that Rashi offers two interpretations. For some reason, Rashi preferred the second. I prefer the first. Rashi offers two interpretations, definitions of the word Pesach. The second is psicha lashon dilug v'kvitza. If you can see in source 23, the second line. My mouse isn't working. Right? The second one is this lashon dilug v'kvitza, this jumping and skipping. What's the first interpretation? Ufasachti v'chamalti. I will have compassion. I will spare. As it says in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, and I'll show you the Pasuk in Yeshayahu in a moment, Pasoach v'himlit, sparing, says Rashi, and delivering. Chamla. What is that about? And even though Rashi rejects that interpretation, in fact, that is the definition in Unklus. In Source 25, Unklus translates Pasachti as ve'echos aleichom, I will have mercy upon you. Nothing to do with jumping over. Nothing to do with passing over. What's it based on? Oh, this is going to be very frustrating. You know what? I'm going to stop sharing for a second. I apologize, Rabbi Kelman. I'm just going to stop sharing for a second see if I can't reboot that sharing screen, and maybe that'll help. Because right now, I can't do this without a mouse.
You don't have to worry about sharing the if you don't like
it. I apologize.
Torah Shabbat Peh. We can do it as Torah Shabbat Peh.
Rabbi, how do you translate the word chemla?
The word what?
Chemla, that you just mentioned.
Just reboot and... Okay, now where am I at? Am I good? No, I'm not. Okay, I'm going to reboot. I'll be right back in. Take me 2 minutes. I apologize. This happened to me. What happened to me once in a Kohelet class, and it just do not know why.
Everybody's so quiet waiting, you know? Like, people are on. Like, the food would turn, the matzah is going to turn into chametz if we have to wait so long. Okay.
Dargon, like madrega, like steps. Right. Steps up.
That's Shir Hamalot.
That's Dr. Jastrow translates Dargon from the Yerushalmi as being a staff, his accompanying staff. He puts in brackets of angels, but officers.
You're saying that's what he translates seraph.
I just looked up Dargon, Derig. Here in Israel, how do we have, they use the word Derig? Like, it's a level. Your rank. And a madriga is a step causing you to go up.
Yes, okay. At third, okay. Yeah.
If there's any, if it's any comfort, I have to say the last 2 weeks, any kind of webinars I've taken, and even in person at U of T and elsewhere, each and there's been about five or six different organizations, associations where there's been trouble technically. So this is honestly, I went to a U of T thing, and it's
like today.
No, this past couple of weeks, I would say. It's amazing.
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, 99% of our classes have zero.
Yeah, this never happened.
I don't even know. I don't even know what the issue was. It was fine. I mean, on his end, there was an issue, but on our end,
it is.
Fine. But yeah. Okay, listen, the speakers are, you know.
No, but that happens. It comes with the territory. Okay.
I'm back on. I apologize for that. I do not know why that happened, but it's very rarely happens, but we're back on. Let me just get back to where we were and share my screen. Jay, if you're staying on
the screen, because now that you're back on, I have to make you co-host. That's why.
Okay. Mind.
A regular balabas. Okay, now you're co-host.
Okay. No, that's all I want. Okay, share screen. Let me share Google. Okay, I apologize for that. Oh, but now I can function again. So come all the way back down to where we were for a moment, which was just at the punchline. Says Rashi, two definitions of the word Pesach. One is v'chamalti, and he bases it on this pasuk in Yeshayahu, Pasach v'himlit. What does Pasach v'himlit mean, and where does it come from? So let's take a look at the pasuk for a second. I'll come back to those earlier sources. Yeshayahu perek lamed aleph. Kom Hashem ilai, Yeshayahu, speaking about the siege of Yerushalayim in the days of Sennacherib, the famous moment when God came out and destroyed the camp of Ashur. Kom Hashem ilai, kashe yegea yeg v'akfir al tarpo asher yikare alav milo ro'im mikolam lo yichat, just as a lion and a young lion roar upon their prey. Kain yered Hashem tzvot litzbo al har tzion v'givata, so too shall God come down and fight for Mount Zion and its hills. Ketziporim afot, like birds flying. Kain yagen Hashem tzvot al Yerushalayim, so shall God protect Yerushalayim. Ganon v'hitzil pasoach v'himlit, defending it, delivering it. I'll come back to the word pasoach. I don't like that translation. Right? Pasoach. And preserving it, protecting it. The ganoti la'ir azot, I will protect the city to save it. As vayetze malach Hashem bayakev machane Ashur, the malach went out to smite in the kingdom and the camp of Ashur. And what was God doing at that moment when the malach was going out to destroy the camp of Ashur? The ganoti ala irazot, protecting the city. The word pasach doesn't mean, sorry, this is the computer acting up again. The word pasach doesn't mean to jump. And this is expressed by a number of sources, such as the Mechilta, offers two opinions. The second opinion is pasach is to jump, to come from one to the other. But the first opinion says, Rabbi Yishmael, Ra'iti et adam, it says, Ani niglav v'chasa lechem, the moment I see the blood, I will reveal myself, and I will have mercy upon you. Ufasachti alechem, and I will poseach on you, as it says, and he quotes the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Says the Ketav HaKabbalah, Loshan HaGanav HaTzalah, means to protect and to save, not to jump over. So now let's define the pshat. What does a bird do when it wants to protect its eggs in the nest? It sits on them, or ketziporim afot, like birds flying. What do birds fly when they want to protect their nests? What do?
They hover.
They hover. And they protect what they're hovering over. When God entered into Mitzrayim that night, he didn't skip over the houses of the Egyptians and the Mashkit went, who's the Mashkit, where's God? No. God hovered over the homes of the Israelites, and the Mashkit, the Malach, went out to kill and to destroy the Egyptian firstborns. The Malach Tzva Hashem went out to do God's bidding. Well, God, the Shekhinah, was hovering over the home. Why? Because the home was a Mizbeach. Because the home was a Mikdash. Because the home was the place where the Shekhinah was. And the Shekhinah's presence hovered over the homes. Poseach, pasachti abatei b'nei Yisrael. I didn't pass over the homes of the b'nei Yisrael. I hovered over them. I protected them. While the Mashkit, says Rashi, even the Mashkit is out there doing its thing. God, house by house, blood post on the doorpost by blood on the doorposts, hovering over the homes of the Israelites, protecting, like a mother bird protecting its nests, V'ganoti ala ir hazot lo shi, I will protect this city, and v'yetzei malach Hashem v'yakehu b'machaneh Ashur. But God will hover over his children and protect his people. That's the word paseach. If you look at the phrase itself, it's a fascinating pasuk. I heard this once from Medan. It's a kind of a chiasmic structure. Pasach al batei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, b'nakpot mitzrayim v'et bateinu itzil. It's a perfect chiasmus. Pasach al batei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, b'nakpot mitzrayim v'et bateinu itzil. Hovered over the houses of Israel in Egypt. This Malach smote Egypt, and our homes he saved. The word pasach is a synonym for saving, for protecting, for hovering over. That's why Pesach is called the Leil Shimurim, because God literally hovered over the homes of Israel and protected them while the Mashchit was out there doing its thing. Hashem Shamram, God says to Ibn Ezra, Leil Shimurim, God protected them and didn't let the Mashchit enter their homes. What does it mean, lo yiten the Mashchit levor bateihem? Because God was in their homes, because God was hovering over their homes. God stood over the altars of Israel, v'ra'iti et Hashem nitzav al ha-mizbeach, where every Jewish home was an altar, and every family was a sanctuary, and every Shabbos, and every table was a mizbeach. That's exactly what Pesach was about. There is no holiday. I'm going to stop sharing because it'll be a little easier. Let's see if I can do this. There is no holiday that defines the intimacy of that relationship of God protecting us like his children, hovering over the homes of Israel, which were adorned with the blood of the Mizbeach and in which we were fulfilling the Korban of Pesach. And there was no greater example than that. That's what it was all about. So the fascinating piece of the story is that we...
There is another holiday. There's Anane Kavod on Sukkot.
Yeah, again, a similar idea, but that's exactly my point. We make a big deal out of the Anane Kavod on Sukkot. And Pesach, we talk about jumping over the houses? I can't tell you how much... Rashi offers two interpretations, but if we would only let go of the interpretation, the second interpretation, and embrace the first, suddenly the holiday is not the holiday of God passing over, the holiday of Passover. It's the holiday of hovering. It's the holiday of protection. It's the holiday of God, the Shechina, b'chvodo be'atzmo. That's what we say in the Haggadah. V'avarti be'eret Mitzrayim. I entered into Egypt, and I would hover over the homes, and I would enter into your homes, and I would be there for you. Not even the Ananei HaKavod. This is even more intimate than the Ananei HaKavod. The Ananei HaKavod is external. It's a manifestation. This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo be'atzmo. This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu literally hovering over every home to say, you, the Mashchit, you, the destroyer, you do not enter here, because these are my children. That's what Pesach is. And if we could, if I jump back to where I started, which was that moment, that image of all of these destroyers coming from all corners of the world, one corner of the world in particular, trying to enter into our bayit and into our home, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu, through his agencies, protecting our people, protecting our home, suddenly Pesach rings in a whole different fashion. And come back to the pasuk with which I opened, Ki meitzitchem be'eretz Mitzrayim erenu niflaot. To share with you wonders like when we left Egypt, that's how I will share with you and show you wonders when you return home in the redemption that we are experiencing today. I apologize for all of the technical glitches, but that, I think, is my presentation on what I think is one of the most dramatic mistranslations in Jewish life. Pesach is the holiday of protection and the holiday of hovering over his children and protecting them, not passing over our homes and going out to destroy. That's the role of the Mashchit. The role of the Ribbono Shel Olam is to embrace his children who are engaged in the home, in the Mizbeach, on in the altar, in the Mikdash, and were engaged in an intimate relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's where God was that night in Egypt, and that's where he is every night of Pesach. And with that, I will conclude. I apologize for going over a few minutes just to kind of deal with the computer glitches. Happy to take questions, but I know that you have another class starting in a few minutes.
It was amazing, because I also could never figure out what this flying over who knows what houses could have anything to do with anything.
Exactly right. And this is a whole different way of looking at Pesach, and I think it's there in Rashi, and it's there in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. I don't. We have this. I mean, the Medrash mentions comment. Both options, so I get it. The Medrash mentions both options, and but I like one or the other.
Okay.
Right.